Welcome to This Is Money podcast. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me and Deputy Editor Lee Boyce today is Assistant Editor Helen Crane. And coming up, are the days of cheap holidays over? That's if you can get abroad. Passport office chaos is causing misery for wannabe travellers. We take a look at sky-high drop-off charges, share some of our best pearls of holiday wisdom, and Crane is back on the case. This time, it's a holiday ruined by chickenpox. Away from travel, and we take a look at inflation's impact on our pensions and ask, is it time to scrap standing charges? Don't forget to stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
Market updates and conversations around the financial world don't have to be boring. The Digest and Invest podcast by eToro is a great way to tune into what's happening in a fun and easily digestible format. Discover the Digest and Invest podcast at etoro.com/academy/podcasts.
But first, summer holidays have once again been thrown into chaos. Cancellations, delays, queues, confusions at airports, railways crossing the channel, and at the passport office. But staffing and COVID to one side for now, there are plenty of evergreen issues that can impact your holiday and spending. So we'll be dishing out our top travel tips shortly. But first, I want to ask, as many are at the minute, are the days of cheap holidays over? Do you remember there was a sale? I think it was last year, was it? For $7.99, $9.99. Are we ever going to see the likes again? Ryanair warning that soaring fuel costs means the era of bargain flights is at an end. They're also the latest airline to hit out airports for this ongoing travel chaos. So, me boys, is that it? Is that the end for bargain holidays? How are flights so cheap? I don't think I ever got one for like $7.99. I mean, I suppose you could do it if you decided to emigrate from the country on a Tuesday without any of your luggage.
I did do it once. I managed to get a Ryanair flight to Copenhagen. It was something like 14 or £16 return. And the flight got me there and back. And I remember thinking to myself, this would have been about 6 or 7 years ago. I remember thinking, how is it I can fly to Copenhagen and back? That wouldn't even get me to London on the train from here. And we're a lucky generation, Georgia, and I do say this when it comes to holidays. You know, it's especially Europe, it's been opened up to us incredibly in the last, you know, 15, 20 years in terms of, you know, these budget airlines that have got us across the continent to various spots, some places that you've never even heard of, for rock bottom prices. And I think for some time that potentially this has been on the cards, the era of these real cheap flights.
I'll answer your own question, if you would, for me. How was that possible? Because, like you say, we totally taken it for granted. The idea that you can fly somewhere, I mean, I don't know if it's because I'm living in an era of how expensive petrol prices are, but it's unfathomable.
Well, airlines, especially budget airlines, make a lot of their money on board, you know, the extra add-ons, the things that you might end up, you know, purchasing. So, you know, they want you to buy food on board. They want you to take out the insurance with it. They want you to get book car hire through it. All of those kind of like add-ons. And, you know, Ryanair has been infamous for that. You know, the extras that you've got to pay, potentially pay. You can still botch the system by, you know, taking your own handbag on board, you know, small bag on board. A lot of people, though, want to go on holiday, want to take a bag, so they will pay to have a stowed bag. But some people will do these kind of things on the real cheap, and especially for a long weekend city break, I think it's been fantastic. And I'm going to just put my absolute voice my opinion on this. I think Ryanair have been great. I mean, you know, it gets a fairly bad reputation for certain things that potentially it's done in the past. But I think actually, and it's turned out to be the good guys of airlines this year, because it's only cancelled 0.3% of flights, which actually is pretty good. And that's in the last quarter. I mean, that's pretty good compared to some other airlines. So, for example, British Airlines is on 3.5% and EasyJet's on 2.8%. And, you know, that's over thousands of flights. And that's quite a fair few flights. 0.3% is pretty good. And it's because Ryanair actually didn't do mass job cuts. You know, it kind of managed to keep the staff on board and ready to go for when there was going to be this pent up demand, basically this summer, that was kind of forecast. And they've done well out of it. But, you know, what they're saying is, I thought this was really interesting. It's fuel bill. in the quarter soared by 560% to £850 million. Now that has got to start filtering through, to flights and how much extra you might end up forking out. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think Ryanair is going to start bumping up prices of flights massively, but I still think there's going to be the odd 10, 20, 30 quid put onto flights. And if you think about it, though, the value is probably still there. You would still probably happily pay, you know, an extra £100 to get away, you know, to the destination that you want to go to. And especially in this climate at the moment, I think you would pay that premium to fly on an airline that would, you know, almost guarantee to get you there, given everything that's going on.
That brings to mind, I was reading an article by someone at Rathbones that talked about the price of a cup of coffee. I'm going somewhere with this, don't worry. That it's got to a stage when you're paying £3.50 where you're questioning the value. Why am I paying £3.50? I love coffee. I love going out. I can probably afford to do that, but I'm not getting the value for it. With flights, with holidays, there's a lot of scope for value from £9.99 or £17.99 to go up for me personally. Helen, Ryanair also saying that, pulling no punches here, the chief financial officer, Neil Sorahan, saying that basically airport bosses had one job, which was to recruit enough security and baggage handling staff for this summer. They have failed, and it's their fault leading to delays. Have they got a point there?
Yeah, I mean, you could have easily predicted that the first proper summer after COVID, loads of people would want to go on holiday abroad. You know, this wasn't an unforeseen situation. So Ryanair's basically saying, we've done our job, we've managed to keep most of our staff. So this is where the problems have come in with other airlines, or some of the problems with BA and EasyJet. So they've lost a lot of their staff and they haven't been able to get enough staff, to new staff to come and join them. So that's been the cause of some of their sort of delays and cancellations. But Ryanair's saying, you know, we've managed to keep our staff, but what the problem is for them is that the airport staff aren't there. So there's delays with things like baggage handling and air traffic control, and that they're saying is having a knock-on effect on Ryanair flights. So this is where you've seen this kind of fairly small percentage of flights cancelled and delayed. Clearly airports were going to be really busy this summer. I think it's probably been slightly difficult to recruit staff maybe for the airports. I mean, you can imagine, you know, if you see people be kind of made redundant or furloughed or sort of decided to leave for whatever reason during COVID, people perhaps aren't flocking back to work in airport because they're thinking, well, A, look how these staff have been treated, and also what if something like this happens again? So, you know, you've seen them offering people kind of signing up bonuses and things, but that in a lot of cases kind of hasn't been enough. So yeah, I do think Ryanair have got a point on that one.
Crystal ball gaze for me then. Do you think the era of bargain flights are over? Or do you think, as Lee said, I think you just said, Lee, like an extra tenner here or there?
Yeah, I mean, it does sound as if with things like, as Lee mentioned, the cost of oil, the price is going to have to go up a little bit. And the thing we haven't mentioned as well is the whole kind of environmental agenda. Like if you look at the airlines are obviously a huge kind of contributor to sort of CO2 emissions, and things like taxes on flights and things are surely going to have to start going up quite significantly, you would imagine, in the next few years. So I think that'll add to it as well. But you know, people love going on holiday, and I don't think, you know, it's the sort of thing where most people will, I think, be willing to pay a little bit more, because people aren't, you know, we've had enough of staycations. I don't think the majority of people who are lucky enough to be able to afford it will say, oh, actually no, I didn't want to pay an extra 50 quid for my flight, so I'm going to go to Norfolk. That's not going to happen. So I think it is probably going to go up, but I think for most people that's something that they'll be willing to pay.
I mean, Norfolk's lovely, don't get me wrong, but this argument about if flights go up then people are just going to staycation, do you have any idea how expensive it is to staycation in the year? It's just ridiculous. Anyway, Lee, the problems for holidaymakers though don't stop there. The next one actually is affecting me at the minute. It's trouble at the passport office. Now, I'm not one of these poor people who've put their passport in for renewal, etc., and then they're still waiting months later. I mean, they got a weird story here about ink, we'll go into in a sec, but I have a problem that I must have got water on my passport. There's two problems, actually, and I think it's got a bit moldy, and sadly it's across my face. Makes me look like I've got terrible, we'll talk about chicken pox as well a little bit later. And so some people are questioning when I go through the passport office, is that me? And then also the chip doesn't work. Oh, it drives me mad. So I can't go through the speedy doodah things anyway. So I've been putting this off for ages because you know how I like to last minute travel. And I'm looking at all these stories, Lee, and I'm thinking, when is a good time for me to think about, you know, not having a holiday for 10 years because I'm not going to get my passport back?
It is one of those things. And it's one of those things when you send your passport off to then get renewed, there's something like, it's almost like losing a part of you when you send that passport off to get renewed. There's something quite like a horrible feeling. And actually talking about the passport getting wet reminds me of a great story of my best mate. And we booked some flights probably about 10 years ago. We went to Barcelona. And he cycled over to my house. He lived about 15, 20 minutes away. And as he cycled over with his passport in his pocket so we could book the flights, it absolutely pelted down with rain. And he arrived at my house and his passport was just completely ruined. So the bargain flights were just completely offset with the renewal cost of his passport. But that aside, look, I think that the passport office is obviously having to deal with an influx of renewals and new passport requests, and actually they're expected to deal with 9.5 million applications this year. That's up 2.5 million on a usual year, so that's quite out of the ordinary. You know,
is that because people have been putting it off, Lee, or have we just got more people here, or it's just, I mean, there is a staffing issue, isn't there, with COVID and all that?
People would have put it off because, you know, from sort of March, April 2020, you know, through to now, there's a lot of people that have decided that, you know, they don't want to travel. So in that time, passports might have expired and they might be waiting till, the real plumb point to get the most value out of your passport, because it's not cheap to renew your passport and it lasts 10 years and you're going to want to sort of, you know, get it relatively close to your trip to try and maximize it as much. Well, some people will want to do that, but I think the advice at the moment really is to get your passport renewed if you need to get it renewed as soon as possible and then book the trip. I would wait. I wouldn't book a trip. I know it's so boring, but the thing is, if you haven't got your passport sorted and there's some sort of delays or whatever, you know, it's just going to add stress to your holiday and there's no
trouble. It's not about boringly. Some people need to travel. They want to see their family. There's a wedding. They've got work to do.
Yeah, no, and I totally get it. And to be honest, looking at this story, there was a freedom of information request that was in here, and it's 4% of applications have been waiting for 14 weeks or more. And that's about 23,000 odd. So that's a sizable number, but it's not everyone. So I think it's one of those things where I've got friends, again, this is just like evidence I've had in the last couple of months, of friends that have renewed and have been shocked at how quickly they've had their passports back. At least three of my friends, because they've read about all of the chaos and thinking, you know, this is going to take ages, they've renewed their passport, you know, well ahead of time, and it's come back really quickly. But then you get the odd cases in which there might be a problem with the application and all that kind of thing. And actually one of a family member got caught out recently as well, because they didn't realize that children's passports run out after 5 years. They just didn't know, and it's one of those common things. So they went to go away and then realized that one of the children's passport was out of date, because they hadn't been away through the pandemic, hadn't really thought about it, and that's the way it goes. But there's no travel insurance that's going to cover you for passport delays. So, you know, that's the galling thing. And if you are waiting more than 14 weeks, I mean, the likelihood is you think 3 or 4 months is going to be long enough to get your passport renewed. So you probably would book a trip and then go. And then you need to have enough time left on your passport when you go away as well. You know, some countries, it's usually six months, might be a year. It's just best to check before you book. I would just get the passport ball rolling if you need to get it renewed and then book. But obviously that's a bit of, rubbish advice at the moment, because a lot of people are about to set off for their summer holidays and there will be people that are panicking, worried that they're not going to get their passport back in time. And in this story, as you say, there's a strange story about ink. Someone tried to get their passport renewed in this story in which essentially the passport office said that there was some like ink blots on the application, which I'm pretty certain that someone wouldn't send off a passport application with ink blots, because, you know, I when you go through this process, you check it a trillion times because you just want it to go through smoothly. You know, when you even if, when you get the photographs done, it's just like, is this photograph going to be good enough? All of that kind of thing. I find it very strange that she would try and send off an application with ink blots on it and realize it. You would just fill out another application, wouldn't you? Or do it online. And she missed the holiday. And 550 quid out of pocket because it didn't come back in time. And also she didn't get the money back for her application. She had to do it all again. So, you know, there's all these kind of stories. But the thing is, for every one of these stories, you know, there's thousands of people that get their passport renewed in time, on time. It's a good service and are happy. You know, it's one of the things you don't think about if it doesn't go wrong. But if it does go wrong, it goes wrong. Yeah. And it can have a serious knock-on effect. And you can actually... apply for compensation directly with the passport office if, you know, it was delayed. So if your passport was delayed and then your trip was cancelled and they haven't got a reasonable reason, you know, ink blot application, that's a reasonable, you know, how that's happened, we don't know, but that's a reasonable...
The tears of the passport office workers with the overload of work, no?
Potentially, it might have even got wet in the post, you know, as it's travelled through. It could be loads of different things, but that's kind of a valid excuse in a way, but, you know, I feel sorry for the reader in question on that. But if there's no, like, real tangible excuse, they do on a case-by-case basis listen to, you know, if you've had to cancel the trip, because, as I say, travel insurance isn't going to cut it in this instance. But just get it renewed, Georgie. Get it renewed. Wait for it to come back. Hopefully, you'll get it back within a week or two, and then you book your trip. That's the safe bet at this moment in time. And it's not just the passport office. There's other government offices that are struggling as well under the weight of application things, you know, including DVLA and driving licenses. And has just been people have been putting this stuff off and waiting because of the pandemic, and now it's like everyone's sort of defrosted and thawed and just doing all this stuff at the same time. So I have a degree of sympathy. But at the same time, in this story, that there was a report that was done last July that forecast that there was going to be this massive, you know, spike in people applying for their passport. And actually, in this story, the passport office says that 97.7% of applicants are processed within 10 weeks. That was in the first half of this year. So it's just the unfortunate 2.3% that we hear stories about. And that's what could put you off and make you worried.
Yeah, very measured there, Lee, very measured. Helen, Lee spoke about travel insurance. We're going to turn to giving out some of our best pearls of wisdom when it comes to travel. And I think the main one has got to be, even though it won't necessarily help in this case, get travel insurance. You've got an interesting case. Let's talk about your case first. You've been back on the case that kind of highlights this, I think, as well as just the fact that I think there was a customer service issue and all that sort of thing. So Crane, back on the case.
Sure. So this is a really unfortunate story. You've got to feel for this family. So they have a 3-year-old son, and he's unfortunately, from when he was born, he's kind of been quite ill, been sort of in and out of hospital, but he's finally well enough to go on their first ever family holiday with their son. Really exciting. So they're due to fly out to Menorca. But and I think any parents of small kids listening to this will really relate to this. I'm sure this is something everyone gets worried about. A few days before they were due to go, their son comes down with chickenpox. If a kid gets chickenpox, basically they can't get on a plane. It's not allowed. They'll get turned away unless they get to a certain point where the chickenpox is clearing up, and then they can go to their doctor and get a note saying that they're allowed to fly. So nightmare situation, really annoying. The family decided to wait until the last minute to cancel, kind of understandably, because there was a chance that their son would be well enough to go. You know, they really wanted to go on this holiday. So they waited till about 2 days before they were due to take off, and they decided, look, he's not better. We're going to have to call the airline and see if we can reschedule. So this was Jet2 that they were traveling with, and it was a flight and hotel package. So it was just over £2,000, the whole cost. So they called up to see if they could change the dates of their holiday. They were on hold on the phone for just under an hour. When they finally got through to someone, they were told that the deadline for rebooking your holiday was 48 hours. So they'd missed that by 10 minutes. How frustrating is that? And they've obviously been hanging on the phone for the best part of an hour. So if Jet2 had picked up the phone in time, this kind of wouldn't have happened. But they obviously absolutely gutted. It meant that they couldn't get any of their money back. They couldn't rebook. So they'd essentially lost £2,000 on this holiday. I got in touch with Jet2. And actually, as you said, it's important to say that the family did have travel insurance. And as is advised, they booked their travel insurance as soon as they booked the holiday, which meant that, you know, anything like this that happens ahead of traveling, you can still, if you have the right policy, get some of your money back. So of the £2,000, they did claim all but about £800 on their insurance. So it just shows that it is really important to get that insurance that has cancellation cover and, you know, covers that for most of the cost of the holiday. But obviously they were still a bit upset that they were still £800 down and for something that really wasn't their fault. So I got in touch with Jet2 and they accepted that they took too long to answer the phone, accepted that this was, you know, a really unfortunate kind of case, this family. And in the end, they did give them a voucher for the remaining £800. So they can go and book another holiday and hopefully finally get away.
Drives me nuts, Helen, as you know, I've moaned about this before, why it takes the intervention of someone like yourself, incredibly hardworking personal finance journalist, but why they can't do this for their customers drives me up the wall. What I love about your articles are you always give practical advice to help people do it themselves. But in cases like this, it makes me think there is nothing you can do unless you pick up the phone and say to them, hello, I'm Helen Crane from This Is Money, a personal finance journalist speaking on behalf of one of our readers. That drives me madly. You're nodding along.
It drives me mad too, Georgie. And the thing is, Jet2 actually really quite highly rated for customer service, so I was actually quite surprised. And the thing is, if you don't allow some flexibility in circumstances like this, it means parents and people that potentially are unwell will just chance it and get on the flight and potentially make other people unwell, you know, because they think, oh, I can't get a refund, well, hopefully, you know, like child will be okay, or hopefully, you know, I've just got the sniffles, it'll be fine. Which I think is quite an irresponsible thing, you know, after the pandemic. So I was slightly surprised by the response. I mean, it just felt a slight bit nasty to me. And actually, as a parent of a three-year-old, whenever we're about to go on holiday, there is always that on the back of your mind, oh, you know, daughter's got the sniffles, or oh, there's been the classic one the last few months is just getting emails from nursery constantly. There's a chicken pox outbreak, okay, all right, just before holiday, great. There's a scarlet fever outbreak. Well, that sounds a bit Victorian. I mean, what's that going on? You know, there's all these kind of, things that can derail your holiday, especially with young children. So booking insurance, good quality insurance straight after you book your holiday is imperative. It really is, because otherwise you're just going to have worry in the build-up to the holiday, and there's nothing worse. And again, lots of friends and family do this, and I really try not to do this. The weeks leading up to the holiday, the stress of going on holiday, you booked a holiday to go and relax and have fun, not constantly worry about what potentially might go wrong, the little niggles, the little things, you know. It's just, I find it quite strange, you know, that the worry over, like, you know, if people were going to get unwell, or if there's things out of your control, is what I'm trying to say. And you can't worry about every little tiny minute detail of your holiday, otherwise you're defeating the whole object and purpose of going away, in my opinion.
No, indeed. Helen, talking then about travel insurance, it's a minefield out there. This is one of those things where I just overpay. I know I could be more savvy, I could do more research in it, but I'm like, I want belts and braces. And I ended up actually, Helen, I'll tell you, on holiday once, I'd accidentally got myself 2 travel insurance because I get the yearly annual ones. And I got robbed. Sadly, the possessions were not on me and I wasn't covered by either of them, which was a bit frustrating. And there I was with 2 belts and braces, which was probably more expensive than the actual holiday. Helen, how do you find a good one, though, without doing what I do?
Well, I've actually been guilty of doing the opposite. I definitely remember in the past booking travel insurance for like a fiver and expecting that it would cover me for anything. which is like ridiculous. But now I'm a personal finance journalist, and we know better than that. So I would say the advice is to definitely shop around for the best policy. So if you go to our website, we have a comparison tool with Compare the Market, where you can put in all your requirements and see what the best deals are. But you know, don't just look for the cheapest price. Don't be me 10 years ago. You want to really look into what the policy covers. So medical cover is obviously an important one. You want to look out for about 5 million of medical cover, which sounds like absolutely loads, but I think we as a country, where we luckily get healthcare free, we don't realize that medical bills in some countries can be absolutely astronomical. So important to have a good amount of medical cover. You also want cancellation cover, especially at the minute with all these problems with flights and delays. You want that to basically cover most or all of the cost of the holiday, and make sure it covers cancellations for as many eventualities as possible. So illness, flight cancellations, issues with flights and hotels. You know, the last thing you want is to have a flight cancellation, then find out that your insurance won't cover you for the kind of additional cost of that on top of what the airline would pay you. So yeah, covers a lot of things. Another thing that you want is cover for lost and stolen possessions. As you said, you know, nothing worse than getting your bag nicked on holiday, because you know, you might potentially have to get a new passport, you've lost your money, you know, you're cancelling credit cards. That's another really important one to have as well. So you want, I would say, at least £1,000 on that as well. So yeah, make sure you've got as much as possible covered, and book early, as you said. So book your insurance as soon as you book the holiday, because that then covers you for things that might happen before you go.
Just additional onto that is look out for the excess. You know, sometimes the excess that you have to pay can be quite a lot if you've got to make a claim. And also, it's good to check out the star ratings, usually from someone like Defacto, tell you how good quality your insurance is going to be. And it doesn't have to be, you know, crazily expensive, but the outlay that you make on it could end up being, you know, absolutely crucial. So people shouldn't go away without insurance. And other little bits and pieces as well is making sure that you're covered for any activities and extreme sports that you might be going off and doing. And lots of people are used to doing that, but, you know, people falling out of the loop. And the other thing just worth mentioning, which is outside of insurance, is the Global Health Insurance Card, which replaced EHIC. Now, that can help if you're in the EU, and it's well worth getting. You can just apply for one. I don't know how long the wait is, but it doesn't replace travel insurance. So don't think it's going to just replace travel insurance, but it is a good tool to have with you alongside travel insurance. So make sure you get one for each member of your family.
Indeed, good idea. What I'd also say is get the number of your insurance provider into your mobile phone, print out the documents, let people know about them, et cetera, because we're talking now about general travel tips. As I said, away from staffing issues and COVID, there's loads of things that can go wrong, as you've already mentioned there. What are some of our other top tips? Now feels a good time to talk about it. Lee.
Yeah,
hit us with one or two.
I'll tell you what, George, I'm gonna just throw a lot at you.
I'm just do it. All right, go on. I'm ready.
In no sort of order, this is not in the top of the pop star. This is just what came into my head when I was thinking about it. But one of the common things, and I think this gets Googled a lot, especially when people are away, is whether to pay in local currency or pounds when you go to pay. Always pick local currency, because you end up potentially getting stung, especially over the course of a holiday. One of my top tips is to get a secondary current account. I don't think this is a secret. I'm sure I've mentioned this before. And I'd be looking ahead now to next summer or whenever my next trip is, and just putting some cash in there every month as my spending money for the next holiday. But some of these banks offer no fee spending abroad, so that's why I do it. So I use Starling for it, because you can make cash withdrawals and you can pay abroad without any fees, and you've got pretty good rates. If you are going to take currency, I like to have cash on me any time. I like having cash on me in this country, but also like having cash on me when I'm in a foreign country. Just make sure that you're booking in a rate from a bureau before you go to pick it up. Don't just turn up, don't just rock up. You'll get a better rate if you lock it in advance. Don't pay in advance. You can pay when you get there, but just lock in the rate. You can usually just do that with your email address. When you are packing for your holiday, this is such a dad tip, but I like to have, you know, you have your address label on the outside of your suitcase usually. that can get lost quite easily in transit. I always write my name, address and phone number and on a piece of paper and tuck it inside my suitcase just in case. You know, that way it's nothing like a bit of old fashioned pen and paper sometimes and that kind of thing. Car hire. Now, car hire in the last couple of years has gone through the roof. It has become very expensive. What you can do, potentially, if you can find it relatively reasonable within your budget, book it. One thing that's definitely happening at the moment is just go back and check it sporadically, depending on how far in advance you've booked it, because it might become cheaper and you can quite often unbook it and then book it again at the cheaper price. One thing I really like to do is use major hotel booking websites to gauge how much the hotel is going to cost. I then like to contact the hotel directly, ask them if they'll match that price and what kind of upgrades they're going to give me, because I've gone to them directly rather than going through a middleman. You'll be surprised how often that works. And sometimes it can be a little bit tricky if it gets lost in translation, but you know, most countries, you know, have people that speak pretty good English rather than me trying to speak in a foreign language, which just doesn't go well because I'm useless. I like to use Skyscanner, the Fly Anywhere tool. Now, that is a great way of bagging some of these cheap flights if you're a bit flexible. And airlines have their own versions as well. I've recently used it on Ryanair, actually, because I was looking for flights for Italy in September. And I managed to actually save quite a bit of money by flying at different dates than I might have gone for, but it all still works for me, so it's not like I'm doing anything, you know, completely wacky, and the flight times are good. If you've got Avios points, a lot of us are guilty for having a few Avios points knocking around. Use something like Reward Flight Finder and see what you can potentially get with your points. And I would say pay, or at least part pay, by credit card, just to get that extra protection if anything goes wrong. It's always worth doing. And these are all things that I do personally when I book a holiday. And, you know, it might sound like the most boring checklist on earth, but hey, it works for me.
I like it, Lee. I like it. Helen, have you got any more to add to Lee's list? It was pretty comprehensive, Lee. Well,
boring
done.
As well. I think maybe just holiday bookings just are boring, aren't they? Nothing's ever going to be as exciting as actually going on holiday. So it all seems boring in person. One thing I would say is, think about those little essential items that you always forget to pack, but especially if you're going to like a resort type holiday, those little shops will charge you so much for them. So I'm thinking things like a plug adapter or paracetamol or plasters, that kind of thing, that just packs them in your bag, because if you're in a big resort with like one little corner shop, they're going to charge you like €10 for a packet of paracetamol. Take your own 60p, big money saver. I think as well, something I've done, this is more one for while you're away. Obviously the cost of car hire is getting quite ridiculous in a lot of places. Something I've done in the past is, it doesn't work everywhere, but in a surprising amount of locations, it actually works quite well to take public transport. So hear me out, I know it sounds like a bit of a nightmare on holidays, but a few years ago, I went to Mauritius, obviously quite a small island, not the sort of place you would think taking public transport would work at all. But we decided not to hire a car and see how it went getting around. And turned out the local buses were actually amazing. Like, there were buses that went all the way around the island from like beach to beach to beach, cost the equivalent of about 50p for a journey. And obviously, like, so much more chilled out. You can have a beer on the beach, you know, you don't have to worry about driving. I think like research it and see if it can work, because sometimes it might surprise you. Also, if you're going to Europe, check out the trains, because the trains on most of mainland Europe are amazing, really cheap, really fast, really regular, much better than here. So I've in the past looked up flights. So say you're going to, I've been to Italy, wanted to go to say Venice, but the flights to Venice are really expensive. Got a flight to Milan for much cheaper, and then taken a local train, which cost about £20. So definitely worth checking out public transport if you can stomach it, I would say.
I 100% agree. I mean, Lee took all the sensible ones that I had there. So I've had to hurriedly do a little list of added extras. Appreciate, though, that this is a list by a person that doesn't have children. So bear with me. And it was go local transport off the beaten track. Stop off at that random cafe that's not on TripAdvisor. You never know what experiences you're going to get. I mean, it may be an experience rather than good food or a good time. But every experience is an experience. And the other things are just things like be flexible with your dates, with your sort of accommodation that you're going to go for. While package holidays do offer more protection, flights and accommodation separately can be cheaper. It can be more fun. One thing I tend to do, again, this is because I don't have kids, and especially did this during COVID, I would book 2 days from here and then book the rest of my trip when I was there for accommodation. I sort of learned that when I lived in Thailand, because I would go to these resorts. Then subsequently, I looked at how much they would be if I booked it from Britain. You're talking about 10 times more. I'm not saying in places like Spain and Italy, you're going to get 10 times, but you might get a cheaper local rate if you just kind of turn up. But again, like I said, I don't have kids. If you tend to go to a country like I do, Spain quite a lot of times, get a pay-as-you-go mobile SIM from the country you're traveling to, because of course, roaming charges. And then some really random ones I've got here. Have a multicolored suitcase. Just for the fact, you notice it on the little carousel. Buy summer clothes at Oxfam. Really, how hot? I mean, we had a couple of days of real extreme temperatures, but when are you ever going to use those hot pants again? I put buy scales as well. There is a financial link to that, because if you, like me, like to overpack massively, it's good to know how much your bag is weighing so you don't get hit with fees. And then I just put after sign in the fridge. It's a life changer. Nothing to do with finances there. It's just a little tip if, like me, you get a bit warm in the sun. Lee?
I thought you were going to say pack your scales if you're going on an all-inclusive holiday to weigh out how much you've managed to
consume. Throw the scales afterwards.
And then divide it by the amount you've spent and see how much you've managed to consume. Yeah. Which is why I thought you were going with that. But
no,
that's part of the list. After signing the fridge, is a game changer. Yeah. But make sure you've got a good factor.
For 100%, yeah.
Going, you shouldn't need to rely on that after sun.
Kudos, I think. Is it Boots now that won't do their own brand and anything under, what is it, 50 for kids and 15 for, I can't remember. But either way, I only ever use factor 50, which is why I reflect the sun, Lee. That's it for part one.
I'm joined now by Sam North from eToro for our weekly look at what's been going on in the markets. Hello, Sam. How the market's been this week? What have we seen?
Hi, Lee. Yeah, this week has been a blockbuster. To name a few things, we've had the Federal Reserve interest rate meeting decision. We've had the US and Eurozone GDP numbers and plus earnings out some of the biggest companies in the world, such as Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, Microsoft and Meta. I said last week that if we can get through this week, survive it all, then it's such a big step to sort of form a bottom in the market and start pushing higher. On the most part, earnings have been okay, pretty good, and that's help some of those companies push higher. But also what's been quite interesting is the US GDP number was awful and the market rallied. So this coupled along with the Fed mentioning that they're noticing weakness in the economy is now bringing forward rate cut expectations. So maybe we're starting to sort of move into an environment where bad news is actually good news for the market. Either way, markets have had a great week and my fingers are crossed that it can continue.
And can it continue? What's ahead for next week?
Yeah, no. So next week, first week of the new month, typically August, relatively quiet, people are on holiday and so on. But with everything going on at the moment, there's no guarantee it will be a quiet one. Next week, we've got the Bank of England policy decision, which will be the main event from a UK perspective. Will they raise rates by 50 basis points? Will they raise rates by 25 would be the main question there. We've also got US jobs numbers, which comes out on Friday. So that'll be important, especially considering the Fed are saying they're very data dependent ahead of their next meeting in September. And we've got earnings from companies like Kellogg's, AMD, BP, PayPal. I mean, the big earnings are pretty much done, but they will still have an impact on the market.
Do you think BP will have stronger results as Shell?
I expect so. I think the market would expect that. So, yeah, we go in expecting it to be good. But the way markets are, that if it does come out bad, then, yeah, there's a fair bit of downside to come. But, yeah, positive at the moment.
Thank you very much, Sam, for joining us. Until next week, take care.
See Thanks, Lee.
Welcome back. Right, after all that holiday talk, it's a bit down to earth, I suppose, now. More dire pension warnings, my favourite. After house price figures. This time, though, it's not us being blamed, but inflation. A new study reckons fewer than 2 in 5 households will be on course for a decent retirement due to the soaring cost of living hitting budgets over the coming year. not good, but Helen, what on earth can we do about it? Firstly, why is inflation impacting our pensions?
Well, it's kind of twofold, really. So the most obvious answer is, you know, inflation's going up, so the cost of things is going up. So the money you've got in your pension isn't going to go as far when you come to draw it. This is especially a worry for people who are maybe closer to having to draw their pension, because yeah, the cost of, I mean, almost everything, food, mortgages, everything is going up. So the money you have sadly won't go as far. But another worry is that we're starting to see reports that some people are cutting down the amount that they're contributing to the pensions, or even stopping contributing altogether because they're worried about the cost of living. You know, they're seeing their expenses go up, and especially younger people are maybe thinking, this is a cost I can't afford at the moment. You know, I need to use the money for other things. The expert advice is obviously really try not to do that if at all possible, because it can have quite a severe sort of knock-on impact on your retirement. But it's difficult for a lot of people.
So keep on saving if you can. Lee, what do we mean though by a decent retirement?
Well, in this report, they're saying that a single person needs a minimum income of £20,800 a year, and as a couple, £30,600 a year. And that includes the state pension, which is currently worth £9,600 if you qualify for the full rate. I think it's a bit of a worry because, you know, a pension payment, there's people that are maybe tempted to cut back on the percentage that they're saving, or just leave it glued at the bare minimum, just because of what is going on in terms of things getting more expensive. This barometer showed that 71.9% of households with an average household income of £102,800 are on target for a moderate income, as I just defined. I find that stat quite staggering, because that suggests that almost 3 in 10 households that are on six-figure salaries combined aren't potentially on track to have a comfortable retirement. I think that's quite a huge number, and people might fall short. You know, you might be earning a decent amount, and your household might be earning a decent amount, but if you haven't sorted your pension, or, you know, you're not making enough contributions to it, you could find yourself racing towards the end of your working life thinking, I've worked incredibly hard, I've managed to earn an above average salary, why is my retirement looking like this? Why is it not what I was expecting? And I think that there is way more onus on people now to ensure that, you know, checking out pension forecasts and projections and making sure that you are going to have that retirement that you expect. And it could be as simple as tweaking your pension contributions by 1%, 2%. Which I know sounds a lot, but if your employer matches it, or matches it and doubles it in some instances, it's one of the best, basically the best savings account you're ever going to have. Yes, you can't access it until, you know, you're older, but your future self will thank your past self for doing this. And I just think it's an interesting piece of research, because I think that there's a lot of people out there that are on a comfortable salary and aren't potentially doing enough to think about their retirement. And I'll be honest, life gets in the way, because you might be saving for a home, and you might be buying a home, you might be starting a family, you might have unexpected costs going left, right and centre. And it's not always as cut and dry as save more into your pension, because there are things going on, and especially at the moment when we're going to talk in a minute about energy bills, but things like, you know, the cost of living crisis come and rock your finances for a couple of years, and the pension slides down the scale, because it's not the here and now, it's the future. And the future feels so far away sometimes. I think that, you know, you can be forgiven for making certain choices.
It's difficult, because on last week's episode, of course, Lee, we spoke about the FIRE movement, you know, frugal living and all that sort of thing, so that you can retire early. There is a balance to be had here, and it seems like many of us just aren't getting that balance right. But Helen, it's so difficult at the moment, particularly, but it is a tough time for people at the minute. So when you say, you know, your future self will thank you, well, your present self is absolutely crying at the minute, because you can barely afford your bills.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's an incredibly difficult situation to be in. But I think, you know, looking at this research, as Lee said, what they're defining as a kind of moderately comfortable retirement, it's not a lot of spending. You know, it's the weekly shop be, you know, £74 a week. You know, that's not a huge amount. You know, you'd have a 3-year-old Ford Focus. You know, this isn't a kind of glamorous lifestyle. And it is, I think, you know, it's so hard to think about, especially when you're younger. Retirement seems so far away, and I completely sympathize with that, because I'm in this situation Lee mentioned, where, you know, I'm saving it for a house deposit, and increasing pension contributions to me just seems like, you know, what, why would I do that when I've got this much more kind of pressing priority? But I think just keeping something, you know, just contributing something if you can, rather than cutting it out altogether, is so important. Because, right, you know, the last thing you want to do is get to retirement and be really struggling.
Absolutely. Right, well, Lee mentioned their bills, energy bills. I'm afraid if you just take a look at the front page of the newspapers, all about the fears that energy bills could reach close to £4,000 this winter. Wow, Lee, wow. We're going to talk about standing charges shortly, but the latest predictions, goodness me.
It just seems to be going up and up and up. And these forecasters I was reading this week are now saying potentially inflation might reach 15%. Now we're saying energy bills might reach £4,000. It just seems to be every week there seems to be a bit of a upscaling of what to expect. And I read somewhere suggesting that the average bill for energy alone in January is going to be £500. And that is a sizable amount of money. People are rightly concerned. And there's some people that are already facing far higher bills now. But when we see this next energy cap, it's going to go up completely bananas level, it looks like, from October, you know, as winter's starting. And then January looks, you know, even worse. So it's a concern. It's a worry. We've obviously had some household packages and things come out. But, you know, is it going to go far enough? What does the future hold? You know, we're talking about, they were talking about energy bills spiking this winter, but as these forecasting models often show, there's no guarantee that they're not then, you know, going to stay high for a considerable amount of time. And for that reason, and actually this is something that gets our readers especially upset, standing charges. So standing charges, essentially, I would think of it as almost like a line rental for your energy. It's the cost of supplying gas and electricity to your home. This standing charge has gone up, and a lot of people have complained about this because they use bare bones energy. You know, they've really cut down, but the standing charge.
Nothing you can do about it.
It's just a flat charge, and it's especially.
It is covered by the energy price cap, though, isn't it?
It is covered. So, as I said, the galling thing about this, though, and what gets people annoyed is, for example, this week we've had Centrica, British Gas, having profits up fivefold. Now, that gets people very annoyed, and it gets people very annoyed when we're having to pay more for the energy supply to come into your home. A large reason why it's gone up and why it was allowed to go up is because of failure of energy suppliers. When all the energy suppliers went bust, some of that cost was leveraged with that standing charge cost. Could Ofgem have done more to have prevented some of these energy firms from going under? And was the license handing out of licenses stringent enough? And should have there been a forecasting of this kind of a scenario to stop this kind of thing happening? And then potentially we might not have seen the standing charge go up to the level that it's gone up today. There are calls for it to be scrapped. Now, I can't imagine it being scrapped. It could be scrapped for low-income households. I could imagine it getting cut. At the moment, it's 45p for electricity and 27p for gas, right? That equates to an extra £163 for electricity and £98 for gas on an average bill. So we're talking, you know, £250-60 there for the average bill. If you're using the real bare bones, that is quite a galling amount of money. And a lot of people will say, well, show me a breakdown of where this standing charge goes and what it's being used for. And how does that directly correlate to a company like Centrica having profits up fivefold? You start connecting the dots and people start to get quite angry. And I don't blame them. You know, we're at a time now where you know, many of us can suck up, you know, higher energy bills. We don't like it, we don't want it, but we can do it. There's a lot of low income households, there's a lot of pensioners that I fear this winter, and I've said this for many months, is going to be an absolute disaster and a horror show. And at the end of the day, if something like scrapping the stand in charge or at least cutting it for some households helps, it's a measure that should be under serious contention. It should be really thinking about. And basically, an Ofgem spokesperson on this said, protecting consumers and making this energy market fair for everyone is our top priority, and that's why we are reviewing the issue of standing charges, as our CEO committed to at a recent parliamentary hearing. Currently, some costs of supply failure are recovered from electricity standing charges, and the contributions are uniform for all customers, regardless of how much energy they use. Now, that to me hints that there might be lower standing charges for households that maybe don't use as much energy. But I can't guarantee that, Georgie. Who knows? And with all the kind of, you know, stuff that's going on government-wise at the moment, you know, everything feels up in the air. And there's not long to act before this price cap bites.
Yeah. I'm always reluctant to end the show on a bit of a Debbie Downer, but I don't know where we go with this one, to be fair, because Helen, you know, Fuel Poverty Action are predicting that more than a third of all households will be facing fuel poverty by Christmas. This is an absolutely dire situation. I mean, I think because of the hot weather at the minute, it's not quite sinking in, maybe. But oh my goodness, when the weather starts to turn, there'll be serious consequences to this, I think.
Yeah, it's an absolute nightmare, and it's going to be a disaster for so many people. So there's no real positive.
Don't worry about that, everyone.
Bit on this, I think there's a difference, isn't there? There's a difference between people who their energy bills are going up. It's really annoying, but they can handle it. You know, I would put myself in that category. But there's people for whom, you know, this is going to mean they can't turn their heating on. They can't heat food in the winter. It's absolutely terrible. I think the only solution is really for the support available to be targeted at people who are in that situation, rather than, you know, we obviously saw the council tax rebate that was for, you know, quite a lot of people who didn't necessarily really need it got that. I think a lot of people would say, you know, target that support really at the people who desperately need it, and just step it up, because otherwise people, you're right, it's going to be an absolute disaster. People are going to be, you know, in real, real danger this winter. And I think, you know, we need to do something about it now, because, you know, winter's on its way and it's just gonna get worse.
Yeah, 100%. On a slightly more positive related theme though, do you remember, Lee, we were talking about those eco eggs that you put in your tumble dryer to, obviously I shouldn't be tumble drying at the moment, but we have had some rainy days, that's supposed to, I don't know what it does. Does it separate your washing so that you don't have to do it for so long? I'll be totally honest with my anecdotal kind of research into this, hasn't made a blind bit of difference, Lee.
Oh no. Oh, I thought you
well, were I don't know. It might done. All I know is it just makes this horrible banging sound that I'm sure is not good for the inside of my tumble dryer. And then it gets caught up in my washing. So these sort of pineapple eggs keep flying out whenever I take my washing out. But, you know, they're still there. I'm still using them.
Have you timed the tumble dryer without the egg and with the egg in? I think you need to see how long it takes and then how...
Then we'd have to have the same amount of washing. Do you know what I mean?
Like same... It's got to be quite scientific.
Yeah, maybe I should, Lee.
I thought you were going to somehow end the show off of a Debbie Downer there. I thought you were going to say it was like something that's changed your life.
I thought it was entertaining nonetheless. I've still got them. I still find them, you know, they're quite useful to squidge a little bit. And, you know, it's a nice tactile thing.
You're using it as a stress ball. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. If I want to be exact, I can throw it. You know, it's a lot of fun, but I'm not entirely sure it does. But if anyone has got an eco egg and it's really working and I'm trying desperately just to do less, but I'll be honest with you, Lee, I still have to keep turning it to do a little bit more.
Well, I'm really sad to hear that. I'm trying to frantically think of a
I should put
way
more
to...
than two in. I don't even know if you're supposed to have more than one, but I was like, oh, we'll chance it. Let's have two. Maybe I should, you know, fill the washing machine with them or tumble dryer, whatever it's called.
No? I'm going to end the show on a high. Yeah. This is the way to beat the energy bills this winter. Yeah. Find yourself a cheap package holiday, and then you won't have to, you know,
move abroad
or just move abroad or kind of stay with some friends somewhere where it's warm for a month and try and save yourself 500 quid. You know, I'm not joking about this. I mean, it's just, it's worrying. It's very worrying. How do we finish this on a high? This was meant to be a holiday special, and I feel like we've given everyone a holiday from hell.
I tried to lighten the mood there, Lee. I tried, and you just dragged it right back down. Well, that's it. Like, where do we go from there? That's it. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team or anything you'd like them to look into, Lee.
editor@thisismoney.co.uk, or you can go to us on Twitter @thisismoney, and you can also go and go in the reader comments of where this podcast will live. And please do tell us any of your money saving holiday tips and little tricks, because I love hearing them, and there's always things that I've never heard and our readers wouldn't have heard, and if we get some good ones, maybe we'll round up and do a, you know, here's some good money saving holiday tips you need to know now.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.
Market updates and conversations around the financial world don't have to be boring. The Digest and Invest podcast by eToro is a great way to tune into what's happening in a fun and easily digestible format. Discover the Digest and Invest podcast at eToro.com/academy/podcasts.